So hopefully when you're listening to this episode, it's corresponding with when we recorded it or plan to release it, which is in conjunction with, is it Independent Bookstore Day?
April 27th,
2024. Woo!
Support independent booksellers.
Yeah. Isabel and I, since we're Chicago-based, there's a few places like Love Sweet Arrow, which is in Tenley Park, which is south of the city. There's also a new one that just opened up.
The Last Chapter.
Yep.
In Roscoe Village.
In Roscoe Village, which is, I would say, like less than a year old, brand spanking new.
It is brand spanking new.
And then, of course, the stalwart Women and Children First in Andersonville. Roscoe Village and Andersonville are neighborhoods, if you were confused, which you might be. But it's on the far north side. It's been around forever, and it's just recently started selling romance novels.
Correct. Roscoe Village is famous for the rat hole. So if you know anything about Chicago's pop trivia in the last few years.
Literally less than a year. The rat hole has only existed for less than a year. The rat hole has only existed for less than a year.
Time is meaningless.
Yeah, that's another thing you can do in Roscoe Village. And thus, we've summarized, I think, the sum total of things that are in Roscoe Village. There's some restaurants and bars, but I mean, that's everywhere. So one of the things that you can do if you go to your local independent bookstore that sells romance novels is purchase a little something called a blind date with a book.
Mm-hmm. And it's way better than the in-person version of it, wherein you have to meet and small talk with a human. Here, you purchase a brown wrapped romance novel with a vague synopsis on the back.
Yeah, it doesn't
even have to have a synopsis.
Well, it does. That would be ridiculous. I mean, in theory, you could buy a
super blind
book without any reference point.
It's just wrapped.
Also, but I will say, you do go to the independent bookstore and you do buy the book in person.
You do.
But it is lower stakes than the human-to-human kind of blind date, for sure. And it doesn't have to be brown paper. It can be any kind of paper. But basically, they're removing the reference of the author, the reference of the cover, which is especially fraught, which you might as well with romance novels nowadays.
True. They mean they're totally meaningless.
You know where we stand on that point.
Sure do. Also, before we get into the book that you're about to unwrap live on this podcast.
Two of them.
I need to tell you.
Oh.
I'm the product of a blind date.
Are you really?
I am indeed.
Talk about high stakes.
Very high stakes. In fact, they made out on their first date and then moved in together 8 weeks later.
Well, they had already both
been married
yeah, before. Sure.
They were right? Like, how bad could this really be?
They were spent at that point.
Little did they know.
Who set them up?
A coworker who worked with my dad, who was a family friend of my mom and actually like lived with her older sister as a roommate. And they get to this blind date and they're both like, ooh, Val only eats popcorn and the red M&Ms. Maybe this wasn't the person to set us up on a blind date. They went to a Joan Baez concert and the rest is history.
In Wisconsin.
Yeah, Joan Baez likes the Dairy State.
Sure. Her, you know, it's not too far from, isn't Bob Dylan from he's from Minneapolis.
Yeah, Minneapolis.
Okay. I confuse Minneapolis and Milwaukee all the time.
They're very similar.
But culturally, yeah, pretty similar. So yeah, I myself decided to take a chance with my coworker who only eats the red M&Ms. A local independently owned bookstore. And I selected two blind date with a books. And I guess I'll just read you the summary that they give and then we'll open them together. And
sounds
I'll
perfect.
Talk about why. Okay. All right. We'll do that then. And surely listen. you'll be overcome. Rush to the nearest local bookstore and demand a blind date with a book. All right. So this one says, for anyone who desperately wanted Bend It Like Beckham to be sapphic, this is your moment. FF.
Nice. That's actually a very good synopsis because it tells me where I want to be, gives me a cultural reference. It's very good. 100%. Great.
I've heard that when you're in showbiz and you have to come up with an elevator pitch, you absolutely must relate it to something else that was already successful.
That's also the tip for book proposals.
Yeah. I will say I do have one note here. For anyone who desperately wanted Bend It Like Beckham to be sapphic, Bend It Like Beckham is sapphic.
Not enough, though.
I mean, it's intentionally leaping the other direction.
Yes. The subtext was textual.
Yeah, exactly. I think, and also, isn't it enough for subtext to make something sapphic?
Oh, absolutely. But like, I think they're saying on-screen kisses rather than the longing looks that we interpret.
How explicit was Sappho about...
Sappho was famously just the missing spaces. Right.
That's what I thought. So when I read sapphic, I assume it means like suggestion.
Oh, like, no. I think sapphic in common parlance now just means lesbies.
Well, why can't we just say for people who wanted Bend It Like Beckham to be about lesbians, right? Sapphic tells me it implies that there's some sort of subtextual longing.
Or that someone's trying to over-intellectualize something.
Well, that's another thing the modern parlance of sapphic might mean. Mm-hmm. But this bookstore also helpfully includes the FF. Mm-hmm. I think there was also, you can get like an NB. Cool. So it is inclusive in that way. But one of the reasons I chose this book, besides I love Bend It Like Beckham, I really want to read more queer romance. However, it is extremely difficult to find FF queer romance compared to like MM.
That's true.
For instance, when I was in this bookstore, this was the only FF blind date with a book, and there were about 8 MM options I could have chosen from.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think one NBF. I think it's interesting that as a rule, there's way more MM romance even written by women.
That sounds like a paper that we could present.
Well, and like people talk about it, like women also tend to watch more MM porn than FF porn whenever they're consuming pornography. Someone said women prefer homoerotic pornography because there's not a power imbalance. But they tend, which is interesting, but that also, like, something else is going on. I don't think it's that, like, straight women like to look at penises more than vulva.
Honestly, I think this is probably just patriarchy talking, right? Like, straight women are probably, it's not that they like looking at dicks more than they like looking at vulvas, but they know their way around.
Yeah. I think the same reason Damon Swade was put in charge of the
RWA,
the Romance Writers Union, is the same reason so much MM gets written. Isabel, how do you feel about straight women writing MM or man loves man romance?
I'm not opposed. I have feelings about it, but like they're not highly developed.
What are some of your underdeveloped feelings?
Well, just what we're talking about, like, I think straight women tend to veer into MM because they feel like they have, and not to put too fine a point on it, like they have a handle on dicks. So like adding another one can't be that hard. Whereas like,
what do they have on?
But like, this is what I mean, where it's like, I think, and this is like, this is a totally sad assumption that I am making based purely on the straight women that we've read who have described heterosexual scenes of cunnilingus. They seem really out of their depth sometimes, right? Like,
they did.
She tasted like purple. I'm like, you're having a hard time imagining what a sweet, sweet honey tastes like. And like, that's
also, purple is such a fraught color to associate with a white woman's vulva.
Right. I just like, there's, and so that's what I mean. Like, it suggests like an uncomfort with the female body that I think straight women should really investigate. Mm. But like, these are just my assumptions. I haven't done like a investigative deep dive.
Yeah.
But I even encountered it. And like, this isn't just in romance. Like, this is also in fan fiction. Like, female writers that I know their gender of are much more comfortable and much more likely to write MM than they are FF in the fandoms that I follow.
Yeah. See, my underdeveloped feeling is that it's somewhat related to the kind of fraught relationship that straight women have with gay men.
Mm.
Where it's like cognitive dissonance that says like they're somehow safe when they're just as likely or unlikely to be like a feminist ally
mm-hmm.
as every other man. Mm-hmm. There's this kind of like neutering that straight women do of gay men and like this level of entitlement, but also vice versa. I feel like gay men also feel like a certain amount of entitlement to almost objectify straight women. Not in a, I want to have sex with you kind of way, but to reduce them. And so it feels like there's this like mutual, not in all, not, I'm not talking about your friendship, but, you know, in a lot of these relationships and a lot of our public consciousness, right? Like my gay, for example, seems like, whereas perhaps some straight women view lesbians with more complexity and therefore fear of misrepresenting them. But they can talk about gay men. And so because of this like weird mutual entitlement that those groups have to one another's identities.
I think we're both showing up to the idea that straight women fear lesbians. And we're just coming at it from different spaces.
Yeah, they're just, yeah, exactly. I think headline is they're afraid of lesbians. Not you, right? Just like
other people.
Yeah. Go ahead and add us, though. Like, I'm sure whatever you have to say in opposition to this will in no way be more revelatory about you than it is of the content of our podcast. You go right ahead. So this one I purchased for $12 if you're interested. It is a paperback. It's about an inch thick.
Okay.
It's in a snowflake wrapping paper.
It is. Can confirm.
Brace yourself. So it tells me that this was wrapped around the holidays, but I did not purchase it around then. So I'm going to do brace yourself for some ASMR, Isabeau.
Okay.
Isabeau's not looking at me right now, and the gestures are a part of ASMR.
I'm like, oh, I thought ASMR was just audible. I'm just trying to be in the experience.
No.
This is... You're already beyond me.
All right. Quit looking down. What are you looking? What's down
there,
Isabeau?
I'm looking at the thing that I am going to present.
Can you be present with me in
this?
Yes.
Yes. Watch this be the worst book ever. It's a lot of buildup. You have to put it close to the mic. There you go. There you go. Cute. Mm.
I did not see it going there. I don't know why, but it makes perfect sense. I've never heard of this book.
It was on a bunch of lists last year.
Cleat cute.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing sexier than playing hard.
Mm-hmm.
I like that it's a phallic-based innuendo.
Mm-hmm. We just can't wander too far off the main path, you know what I mean? Can be about lesbians, but
it's by Meryl Wilsner, author of Mistakes Were Made, and up the sock it says a novel, in case you thought this cartoon cover was a memoir, perhaps a book of theory. It is in fact a novel. Shall I read the back of the book to you, Isabeau?
As if the pink sun clouds didn't give it away. Yes, please. They're not even next to each other. So I would assume that this book doesn't even have kissing.
No. They don't have boobs, which is nice. I mean, they, like, have them, but, like, you know, she has quite a sexy... I think they have quite sexy facial expressions, if I can just bring it up here for you.
I mean, one's in half profile. I guess the one is much more come hither than the other. Number 17 does not. I don't know. I'm not into what's going on there.
She seems kind of like, oh.
Let's read the back of the book.
Grace Henderson has been a star of the U.S. women's national team for 10 years, wow. even though she's only 26.
Wow.
But when she's sidelined with an injury, a bold new upstart, Phoebe Matthews, takes her spot. 22-year-old Phoebe is everything Grace isn't. A gregarious jokester who plays with a joy that Grace lost somewhere along the way. The last thing Grace expects is to become teammates with benefits with this class clown she sees as her rival. Phoebe is too focused on her first season as a professional soccer player to think about seducing her longtime idol.
I don't love that.
But when Grace ends up making the first move, they can't keep their hands off each other. As the World Cup approaches and Grace works her way back from injury, a miscommunication leaves the women with hilariously different perspectives on their relationship. But they're on the same page on the field, realizing they can play together instead of vying for the same position. With every tackle, the...
There's no tackling in soccer.
Uh-oh. With every tackle, with every layup, with
with every touchdown,
with every birdie.
Oh my God.
With every tackle, the tension between them grows, and both players soon have to decide what's more important.
That's fucking embarrassing.
Or making the roster.
That's fucking embarrassing.
The perfect blend. Wait. Would it change your mind if you found out it was the perfect blend of funny and steamy?
I already feel lied to, and I already believe that the back of the book has shown me what the insides are capable of, which is bad sports, so I don't know.
Meryl Wilsner's Cleat Cute is about being brave enough to win on and off the field.
I like that. That's a cute tag.
You know, I have a close friend who actually works for a national soccer to be unnamed, but I'm gonna run some stuff by her.
Ask her about tackling in women's soccer. See what she says.
I will say, U.S. women's soccer is pretty infamous for people, not just U.S. women's soccer, but women's soccer is infamous for people falling in love.
It is.
On
it's
the
romantic,
green.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, listen, sports romance is a ripe place for this. You're on buses together, you play together, you eat together, there's the team dynamics. It's great. Yeah. I love a sports romance. I think it's great to have it about women's soccer. Listen, don't fucking embarrass yourself with something like tackle. Fucking get out, man. That's like that's a cursory Google search.
Yeah, they could have used other terms.
Literally any of them.
Which I would list, but we don't have the time to go through all the soccer terms that I know off the top of my...
Midfield.
Cleats. Oh, shit.
Goalie.
Striker. The tagline should have been, striker? I hardly know
her. Really? They just should have hired you for the punch-up.
That's not good. Positive feedback from BuzzFeed,
cool.
The New York Times,
cool.
Kirkus,
mm-hmm.
Publishers Weekly,
uh-huh.
and Library Journal. I think we personally know romance reviewers on 2 out of 5 of these.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think as far as cutesy cartoon covers go, this one's good. It might actually be funny. Remember when we read Pucked and it suggested that the Chicago Blackhawks would be riding a bus from city to city on a hockey tour. And it was still really fun, even though it was wildly inaccurate.
That's true.
So I'm going to give Cleat Cute a chance.
Okay.
Oh, Meryl Wilsner uses they-them pronouns. Born in Michigan, Meryl lives in Portland, Oregon, and Jackson, Mississippi. Lived in Portland, Oregon, and Jackson, Mississippi. I was like, what an interesting bi-coastal... before returning to the Mitten State.
Michigander.
Mm-hmm. Some of Meryl's favorite things include all 4 seasons, button-down shirts, the way giraffes run, and their wife. So I'm excited. This is a queer novel written by a queer person.
There you go.
I might actually find out what pussy tastes like for real.
It is supposed to be steamy and funny.
What if they say purple?
Maybe pussies taste purple. I don't know.
I'm the only one. Who doesn't? You already unwrapped your blind date with a book.
I did. It didn't come wrapped. So, total honesty, I got this book at the same time that I got Bride at the weird airport at 4:30 in the morning at Midway. And I couldn't not purchase it. And I purchased it.
Why was it? What's it? What makes it a blind date with a book?
Because I didn't read anything about it. I just purchased it.
That doesn't make it a blind date with a book. Oh my God. I have been dragged here under false pretenses.
First of all,
you didn't buy it from a Brookstone isn't an independent bookseller.
That's true. First of all, it's not. I don't think it was a Brookstone, but it wasn't an independent bookseller. That's for sure. But here's the reason why I had to buy it and bring it before you and all of you listeners is because I think you will remember the C.L. Wilson book that we read.
Mm-hmm. The Winter King.
The Winter King. Turns out this human being wrote another one that you can get at a Brookstone called Lord of Fading Lands. I didn't read the back of the book, and I still haven't. I'm prepared to read it on this podcast.
First of all, will you describe... So you bought it because of the author.
Entirely.
Which is a lot... Like, in my mind, I was like, well, she bought it because of the cover, but she didn't recognize anything else about it.
No.
This is the opposite of a blind date with a book, Isabeau. And I appreciate you bringing this purchasing experience to the blind date with a book WOTUS episode.
You're welcome.
So that people can understand what it's not. A lot of podcasts aren't that thorough, but I'm
so thorough
that we are.
I didn't read the back of it. I was like, C.L. Wilson, you're coming home with me. Also, this cover is entirely unromancy because it's like there are rose petals, there's a flaming wing, and then the cover is very large and there's some like weird sconces.
Yeah. Can you hold it up so close so I can see? Mm-hmm. So there's like a medallion with some kind of wing. Could be a bird, could be a dragon.
Could be.
Maybe it's a mirror. It's got a gold rope trim and scattered rope. It's like a scrying mirror, perhaps.
Potentially.
Isabeau, I hope that you got a third book for free because right there is a sticker that says buy two, get the third three. And I know about Bride and I know about this book now. What was your third purchase?
Goodnight, Chicago for my baby.
Okay.
It was a boring book for the plane.
And then what's in the corners there?
So these are like the sconces. They're like scrolly, like fleur-de-lis type.
Okay, they might be light sconces. They do you know what? It looks like the clips on the ends of like old books or like what Disney would have you believe was an old book before they...
That is what that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
You ready to hear what C.L. Wilson has in store for us? Once he drove back the darkness, once he loved with such passion, his name was Legend. After nearly destroying the world out of grief, legendary immortal Fae King Rain Terran's soul, that was a weirdly placed comma, vanished into the fading lands for 1,000 years. But when an ancient and familiar evil arises to threaten the Fae and Terran alike, he returns to the mortal world to seek the key to their salvation. Rain's search leads him to Elisetta, a woodcarver's daughter who suffers from strange dreams connected to the secret and powerful magic she possesses. Mysterious and ethereal, Ellie's soul sings to Rain, an impossible, undeniable bond that blooms into a deep and faded love. Now, as they grow closer together, Rain and Ellie must navigate court politics, family expectations, all while searching for a way to stop the rising darkness, a darkness that may be tied to Ellie's magic.
All right, I'm going to be honest. I got totally lost in the mists of my own brain during that first part where Rain's whole deal was explained. I was back on track as soon as I heard Woodcarver's Daughter.
Can I also read C.L. Wilson's blurb about herself? I think it's like telling.
Did C.L. Wilson? Okay, yes. Yeah.
C.L. Wilson wrote her first story at age 6. Many years, hundreds of false starts, and 5 completed novels later, she received The Call, in quotes, in October 2006 and sold her epic fantasy romance, Terran Soul, at auction. Her debut novel spent 2 weeks on USA Today bestseller list, and her subsequent novels has gone on to hit a variety of bestseller lists, including the New York Times and Publishers Weekly. So this suggests that this came out before Winter's King, is that right? This was copyrighted in 2007. This is a new print edition.
Wow. I wonder what the original cover looked like.
I don't know, but now I kind of want to look it up.
Why don't you do a quick Google on your phone so we don't hear the clickety-clacks?
Clickety-clacks.
Trying to minimize our clickety-clacks.
Fair.
Just to keep my ASMR piece from earlier crisp. So this was her...
first.
This was her first.
Oh, man, the original cover? That's fucking sick.
Oh, no, no, is it so cool?
That it's so fucking sick.
Hold it up.
Can you see that?
What do you mean? There's show, like, it to me.
A cat monster breathing fire and a weird man.
Cat dragon. It looks like the Winter King, but I don't think those two, they might be in love, actually. And he's like holding his hands up upright with hands wide open. And he's got like mist coming out of one, man. And like embers coming out of the other.
Wow.
Well, that is... I've never seen a fire-breathing panther head as like a dragon.
Oh, man. And then this is a different re-release cover. Here. You know what the dragon cat head kind of reminds me of? It's all those shirts with like wolf heads howling at the moon.
Yeah. Oh, now that one's quite sensual.
Mm-hmm.
That one's quite... that looks like the VHS cover art for The 13th Warrior starring Antonio Banderas. Do you remember that?
That is actually super correct. That is exactly what that looks like. That's crazy. This... so this new cover is totally just like just taking all the sex out of it.
You were wooed by the worst cover for this book.
I wasn't wooed by this cover. I was wooed entirely by the bonkers ass shit that C.L. Wilson
will commit to the
into
page.
My brain. Yeah, man. I was like, I can't leave this unattended, because my stupid ass thought, hey, this must be her answer to ACOTAR. Wrong.
ACOTAR is an answer to C.L. Wilson.
Correct. Now I got the OG.
And your collection is that one step closer to being complete.
All right.
Well, this actual blind date with a book that I have is about the size and depth of Winter King by C.L. Wilson, one of those nice little handhelds that I love so well. What's great is you can like put it in your pocket if you're reading and your train stop sneaks up on you. So that's one of the reasons I purchased it. $8. So more affordable than the other one. I will say the wrapping paper was very appealing to me. It's like this brown craft paper with like an arts and crafts style floral. And I literally thought when I got it, I need to find this to wrap Isabeau's presents because Isabeau will love this wrapping paper.
And true to form, I do. I think it's very cute. This is much better than the other one.
I know you. I know you. Let me read the blind date. A steamy affair between an Arab-American woman who inherits a rundown castle in the English countryside and the duke who asserts the castle is his.
Fuck yeah, 100%. Let's fucking read that.
Boy, girl. I refuse to say MF because it sounds like motherfucker to me.
It does. Arab-American princess in England? Fuck yeah. Let's 100%.
She's a woman. She's just a woman.
I love it. Let's go.
I chose this one because of, it sounds like a castle fixer-upper.
Mm-hmm.
And it also, I love the idea of a modern day Duke story.
Yeah, same.
It sounds like wacky hijinks to me.
Agreed. I have much stronger and higher expectations of this now than I did of Cleek Cute. Ooh, that's actually on my list.
This is The Duke Gets Desperate by Diana Quincy. From the Sirens and Silk series, and I'm judging by the cover dress, I don't think this is a modern day Duke story.
It's not 100%. This is on my top 10 of books I wanted to read with you this year. So it's very handy that you got this.
It's so funny. But this cover is beautiful for it's Lady gorgeous. By Herself covers. This looks painted. She has absolutely stunning Instagram model face.
Mm.
Thrashings of thick hair blowing in the wind behind her.
Mm-hmm.
She's in front of a castle at sunset, not unlike Cleat Cute.
It's true.
We've left the purple and yellow era firmly behind and have entered our sunset colors era on romance novel covers. Our front blurb is from Sarah McLean. Quincy delivers a layered, lovely performance.
A performance.
Oh my God, no. Oh, that's I read that wrong.
Okay.
That was my bad. Quincy delivers a layered, lovely romance.
Mm.
This is published by Avon.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready for the back of the book?
I bated breath.
Anthony Carey, Duke of Strickland, inherits his spendthrift father's title and can finally restore the family castle to its former glory. But at the reading of the will, Strick is stunned to learn that his father has secretly disentailed him, leaving the family manor, home to 12 generations of dukes, to Strick's American stepmother. Everyone knows. Well, I'm sorry. Did you blow your dad?
Nice. Obviously, he didn't try it.
I have to say, I've been thinking about it because there's Priscilla Presley got into a little bit of a feud with her grandchildren over Elvis's estate. And it's like, and they're like, well, they're not married anymore. She's not entitled to anything. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, like legally, no, but she was a child who was stolen from her family and raised by that lunatic in Memphis.
In Graceland.
I think she can be buried there. Like, I think she should continue to collect. I'm sorry. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Continue. Anyway. That can't be where it ends.
That's the end. Everyone knows Strick despises the Dowager Duchess. And when she dies mysteriously, damning rumors start to surface, as they would.
Absolutely. If you've made your hate well known, you're suspect number one.
Also, like, oh, you hate your stepmom. How original.
Right. Also, motive means all that's missing now is opportunity.
Yeah. I've got some feedback for Anthony Carey. Kind of sounds like he sucks. It's way edgier and cooler to think your stepmom's a cool, round, well-rounded person.
That's true.
You are my real mom.
You were the mom you didn't have to be.
No, you are my real mom.
Mm-hmm.
And say it in front of your biological mother.
If she's alive.
Just go wild with it. When Raya Darwish unexpectedly inherits her glamorous late cousin's castle in the English countryside, she clashes with the charismatic young duke who insists the castle is rightfully his. The estate is practically bankrupt, so she must find a way to work with the duke in order to save both of their futures.
Interesting.
Uh-oh.
Forced proximity.
I thought his dad was a spendthrift.
That's why the estate is bankrupt. Spendthrift means you spend rather than being a skinflint, which means that you don't spend.
Wait, I thought a spendthrift meant you spent thriftily, which meant not much.
No, it means that you spend too quickly.
Well, why is it called a thrift store then?
Maybe because people are parted with their money easily there. I mean, you can buy a lot of things for cheap, but
I think it's because the things there are cheap.
Yeah. Spend
like secondhand and but low cost.
The term means that you spend too much.
Why is it called a thrift store?
Because you're thrifty.
Mm-hmm. That means you don't spend a lot of money.
Right. But a spendthrift
is someone who does it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Guys.
English sucks.
Someone needs to get together with the English language and sort it out. The two detest each other, believe it or not.
Love it.
But mutual disdain soon gives way to desire. When questions arise about how her cousin died, Raya cannot help wondering if Strick's sudden unbridled passion for her is part of a scheme to get his castle back.
Oh, no. Well, we're going to read this one this year, so.
The acknowledgments are not even a full page.
Good. Keep it short and sweet.
Do you want me to read the author bio? Sure. Since we did it for the other two.
I just thought C.L. Wilson's was unique.
Best-selling author Diana Quincy is a former television journalist who decided she'd rather make up stories where a happy ending is always guaranteed. Diana grew up all over the world as the daughter of a United States Foreign Service officer.
Mm.
Since her 2013 debut, Diana's books have landed on the annual best of lists in Library Journal, Kirkus Reviews, and Washington Post. Diana is now happily settled in Virginia with her family, but still gets the itch to explore far-off places. When she's not bent over her laptop, Diana reads, practices yoga, and plots her next adventure. Oh, it also has an excerpt in the front. This is classic romance novel stuff, which you would expect no less from the good people of Avon. Blind date with a book.
Pretty satisfying overall. Would do again.
Do it for yourself. Go to your local bookstore and purchase a blind date with a book. Or just ask them if they don't have a section of secretly wrapped books. Ask the person working there, hey, what's a romance novel you'd recommend? And if they go, oh, I don't actually read that much romance, spit on them.
Yeah. And even if they recommend something that you weren't into, like the other day, I asked, there were too many salad dressings. And I asked the waitress which one she would recommend. And she said French. And I honestly tell you, I haven't had French dressing since I was a child at a Pizza Hut salad bar. And I put French dressing on my salad, and it was nostalgic. I wouldn't have chosen it for myself, but I wasn't upset when it happened.
You know, I was about to be like, Isabel, it's 2024. That person is a agendered server. And then I was like, hold on. They recommended French dressing?
They recommended French dressing.
Sounds like they prefer being referred to as a waitress.
Indeed. I was in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. So.
Just kidding. It doesn't matter what salad dressing you like.
It's just a preference. And like I said, maybe you'll find Ilya was, you know, it has other things, right? Like, wouldn't choose French for myself again, but it was nostalgic. Reminded me of that Pizza Hut salad bar.
How about this? Dorothy Lynch.
Dorothy Lynch?
That's my romance novelist name.
That's fucking great. A plus.
Dorothy Lynch. Thousand Island by Dorothy Lynch.
Love it.
My friends, her and her now husband, connected on an early date, not a blind date, but an early date over the fact that their favorite salad dressing was a combination of Dorothy Lynch and ranch.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's something that you do connect on, because it's not like, I don't think that's everybody's tipple, as you would say.
It's not bad. I mean, I tried it. It's not sure. Bad.
But like, would it be your go-to?
No.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm not fucking going to French all the time.
I wonder if now that they like have a life together, if they have like a special third bottle into which they dump their Dorothy Lynch and ranch. And that way it's always mixed and ready for them to ingest.
Maybe one of them does it for the other. It's like, you know, the thing where it's like, this is how I'm caring for you today. Where it's like, who mixed the special bottle?
Mixes the Dorothy Lynch and ranch. Hey, Dorothy Lynch or Thousand Island on a salad.
Not on a sandwich.
No, on a salad.
Mm-hmm.
Which
try
one?
It.
No, which one? Dorothy Lynch Dorothy or Thousand Island?
Thousand Island. On a salad? Yeah.
See, Thousand Island is basically a spread to me. I would have Dorothy Lynch on a salad.
I can hear that. I mean, I see both. I wouldn't choose either of them. But
you prefer a thick and rich salad.
I do. My salads can hold it.
You are from Wisconsin.
Yeah, dude. Okay, like it comes natural, all right? Like,
this is the land of the thick and rich salad. So,
our winters are long and cold, like, you know.
Yeah, land of a thousand thick and rich salads.
Mm.
All right, well,
with that,
We hope you all go out and support your local bookstores, not just on April 26th.
27th.
And not every day of the year, because that would be way too much, unless you're extremely wealthy. But, you know, go on April 26th and go on other days of the year. And don't go to Amazon.
Mm-mm.
And with that, loosen your woes.
The never your nosses.
Mm-hmm.
Woly guacamole, everyone. Thanks for listening to another episode of Womance.
Womance is hosted and produced by my friend Morgan.
And by my friend Isabel. Our logo artwork is by another friend, Mary Reichman. You can find her on Instagram at m.reichman, spelled R-E-I-S-C-H-M-A-N-N.
Original music by Nick Gravlin.
Editing and mixing for this episode was done by Steve Keel.
And our web mistress is Jane Bonzak. They're the best.
You're also the best. We so appreciate your support by listening. Please consider taking this to the next level by following, rating, and reviewing. We read every single review. Or even check us out on Patreon.
If you'd like more woe in your life, you can connect with us on Instagram at womance and on Twitter, where we are at @mans_woe. Or you can find more episodes and content at womancepodcast.com.
If you have an idea or just want to reach out, please email womancemail@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Womance is a part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts to add to your romance collection at frolic.media/podcasts. Until next time.